We want to kick off the show with Gabia Gatavaskaita, the BBC's Dublin correspondent, who's going to take us through the Sunday newspapers. Gabia, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, I suppose the Sunday newspapers are always in danger of being gazumped by unfolding events, and we have really two, one very sad story from Ireland and one political story from the UK, which have broken.
Yes, of course. Well, the Donegal rally taking place this weekend, and a teenage boy has died and two others were injured following a crash during the rally. And the accident happened during the 12th stage of the motorsport event, which is close to the village of Kilmacrenan. And it is understood, as RT reported yesterday, that one of the competing cars veered close to the edge of a section of the road on the Garten stage of the rally and collided with a number of spectators. So three people were injured and transferred by ambulance to Letterkenny University Hospital. One was pronounced dead a short time later, and it is understood he was in his mid-teens and from County Donegal. So very sad news.
Very sad. And the rally has been called off as a result, the rest of the proceedings of the weekend. Going to Britain now, and we saw what happened when Andy Burnham got himself elected and returning to the Commons, and we knew there'd be implications. And of course, Keir Starmer said, I'm going to fight on. I'm going to contest. Indeed. If there is a candidate in the ring, I'm going to fight. He's not, it might appear.
Well, we're looking at Sky News here on the monitor, and it says Sky News understands Foreign Sec tells PM to resign, and it seems that the House of Cards is very much so falling for Keir Starmer. He's expected to announce on Monday that he will step down as Britain's Prime Minister. I think it was The Observer that first reported this yesterday. There's overwhelming pressure from Labour MPs to make way for Andy Burnham, for him to become leader. So it was Business Secretary Peter Kyle who was doing the rounds this morning, and he said that Starmer is spending the weekend, quote, making time to reflect on the political realities he faces. I mean, the writing
game over
all there, isn't it, really, Pat?
Game over. So, it's interesting. I mean, people are saying, you know, Britain's going to be like Italy with the 10 prime ministers in as many years, that kind of thing. And I would say to Andy Burnham, be careful what you wish for. This may not be a bed of roses.
Well, certainly, if you look at the time that previous other UK prime ministers have had, Boris Johnson, Theresa May, Rishi Sunak, they have not been there very long and they've had a very tough time. And I think as a result of all these things, the root issue of all these things is what we're all celebrating 10 years of, Brexit.
Yeah.
So whoever is step up next to the plate, they have their work cut out for them, I think.
And Brexit is memorialised in some of the papers. But let's go through what stories have caught your eye.
Yes, well, look, there's a lot of it in the papers today. I want to start off with the Mail on Sunday, who is leading off with the newly appointed junior minister, Catherine Arda. And the Mail is reporting that a legal firm co-owned by the minister acts as a debt collector for one of the country's biggest private nursing home providers. Now, Fianna Fáil TD Catherine Arda, she was promoted to fill in the space left vacant by Independent Minister Michael Healy-Ray. And she is a solicitor, and she has been for a while, and now she's supposedly, she's finishing off her stake and she's dissolving her role in the business. But the Mail has done quite a deep dive on it, and they're saying that Ms. Arda's company acts as a debt collector on behalf of Highfield Healthcare, one of the biggest private healthcare operators in the state. And they're saying the legal firm was this weekend accused of employing heavy-handed tactics on behalf of its client and sending threatening letters seeking payments of large sums of money to the family of a former elderly patient who suffered from dementia. It's the daughter of the patient. The Mail on Sunday journalist Nicola Byrne said one of the letters she received from Arda McKay was dated May 9th, 2 weeks before Ms. Arda's ministerial promotion. And she's saying, when I got the most recent letter from Arda McCabe, I looked up the company, saw that it was owned and run by a TD. Not only that, but she's just been made a Minister of State at the Department of Justice.
Okay, and it's interesting, the head of sport here of Off the Ball, Adrian Barry, is going. He's leaving here. We'll miss him terribly. And he's going to be special advisor to Catherine. So out of the frying pan into the fire, Adrian, but we wish you the very best of luck. Okay, that's the Mail's big story. They also have a picture of Jules Thomas on the front page. I saw Ian before he died. He looked awful. That's a reference to Ian Bailey. Okay, what else have you got?
Well, I wanted to touch on Veronica Guerin, because on Friday it'll be 30 years when she was killed. You know, she was driving in her car, as of course we know, June 26, 1996, she was shot and killed when she was driving her car. She was actually up excuse me, in court that morning. And yesterday I actually spent quite a bit of time looking back on Veronica Guerin, because Matt Cooper's podcast Path to Power has a whole episode dedicated to it. She's one of the reasons I think myself and many other young reporters got into journalism. I watched the interview that she did with none other than yourself, Pat Kenny, on Kenny Live sometime before she died. But there is a number of tributes to her in the Sunday Independent and also in the Business Post too. But it's Jimmy, her brother, and his sister Marie Therese Branigan and Claire O'Brien and his wife Luann. They're paying tribute to Veronica, what she was like as a daughter, as a sister, as a mother. One interesting tidbit, Marie Therese recalls a childhood memory of the family sitting in the television room looking at a film, and the scary part, Veronica jumped up and ran out. She put her head back in a few minutes and said, "Is it over yet? Is that finished? Is that part finished?" And then she came back and sat down to look at the rest of it. So it just shows the kind of person she was. She was not mad into scary films or seeing scary things, but she was, of course, extremely courageous and very, very brave in her work.
And I remember the person who was being fingered for her murder was a man called Dutchie Holland. Mm-hmm. And I was sent over to interview the aforementioned Dutchie Holland in London, in Jury's Hotel in Kensington it was, where we met. And we didn't tell anyone we were going, but lo and behold, the Director General got a phone call from the guards telling the Director General what we were at. And we got a phone call from the Director General saying, "No matter what you've got, you're not broadcasting it." So anyway, there's a lot of intrigue and all of that undercover stuff surrounding the death of Veronica Guerin. I'm not sure if it's ever been resolved satisfactorily what the entire plot was all about.
Not really. And I think the way that I would think about it is, what would Veronica think if she was here today, and how would her life have indeed unfolded? And so Niamh Horan asked Jimmy Guerin 30 years after her murder, what would Veronica think of the scale and influence of Ireland's underworld today? And Jimmy was silent, and he said, "Look, I think she'd look around and say, what an awful price to pay for nothing, because her life was taken and we missed opportunities to bring about change. And we didn't bring about that change. We brought in the Criminal Assets Bureau, of course, that was brought in very quickly after her death. But that's not making a difference," he says. "At the coalface with drugs, intimidation is worse, everything worse." And he points to the Kinahans and their billion-euro empire in Dubai. And actually, in that same paper, in the Sunday Independent, you just have to flick a couple of pages and there's another story about the Kinahans and their involvements. So you'd wonder, did her death really bring about as much change as perhaps it could have?
A couple of stories on the front of the Sunday Independent. Rival makes explosive Coolmore allegations. They don't make up the main story, and I'm wondering if they're that explosive. Why not? Because the main story they have, Sinn Féin TD sued by woman at centre of data leak, whatever that's all about.
Yes, so it's Fionn Sheehan reporting that there's a Sinn Féin TD who's been sued for illegally passing sensitive information relating to a constituent to her ex-husband without her knowledge. Now, he reports that the ex-husband is a Sinn Féin activist and brother of the provisional IRA member Edward O'Brien, who blew himself up 30 years ago. And there's an investigation that has found that the TD for Wicklow Wexford, Fiontán O'Sullivan, is a Sinn Féin TD there, broke data protection law when he obtained and shared the information with the constituent on the constituent without her consent. So I think it was the husband that went looking for the information. The TD, who was a councillor at the time, got onto the council, asked for the information, and the council provided it, I suppose, in good faith, and that report in the Sunday Independent today.
Now, looking at the front of the Business Post, so-called peace plan, Michael O'Leary on Trump's Iran deal. That should be an interesting piece to read, I'd imagine. But delusion and disorder, 10 years of Brexit.
Yes, and I do want to point to something else as well. Is there's a lot of talk about the EU presidency. Of course, that's, you know, we're kickstarting that in a couple of weeks' time. A couple of reports about it across the papers. The Sunday Times reports about how it's going to be a logistical nightmare in terms of roads that are going to be closed everywhere. Sure. Because, of course, these high-level politicians are going to have to be brought in and shipped in and motorcades and the rest of it. And then, you know, the average person who gets no motorcade is going to have to suffer. The Business Post, really following on that thread, they're saying far too comfortable. Ministers slam Brussels on slow reform. And Cabinet is going to make competitiveness the centrepiece of Irish EU presidency.
And this is after we hear how expensive everything things in Ireland in that report, which I saw yesterday.
Quite literally everything. Housing, electricity, heat.
So who are we to lecture anyone about competitiveness?
Well, Brussels is, quote, far too comfortable and its reform agenda is moving at, quote, a snail's pace. Cabinet ministers have fumed. And the Airbnb clampdown, as the Indo termed it, that is being brought in through the legislative process now by James Brown, latest housing minister, to bring that in. You know, it's been delayed for a very long time, but it's the clampdown on short-term lets. I remember reporting on that a couple of years ago for the Irish Independent and a government source saying to me, yes, the EU is bringing its own clampdown, but they're too slow. So Brussels had been blamed for this for a very long time now.
As I say, given we're so expensive, we can't really lecture anybody on competitiveness when we have electricity prices, which are so horrendously high here. And it's very hard to understand why. You know, there are EU rules about competitiveness, and if we're buying power in from elsewhere, the auction price and so on. It's a complicated system, but it should be reformed. By the way, on the front of the Business Post, it's interesting. The average Irish homeowner now a millionaire.
Good news for some.
So, you know, I mean, you can be a millionaire in terms of your house and you can't afford to buy a car.
Well, I mean, it's unbelievable, isn't it? Soaring house prices have turned the average Irish homeowner into a millionaire. And it's the second annual Wealth in Ireland report. The wealth management firm Fordell found that the net household wealth of homeowners has more than doubled from 480,000 to 1 million euro in the past decade. And homeowners present 97% of the country's 1.4 million euro trillion wealth, while tenants have an average wealth of 70,000 euro and control 41 billion. So, of course, if you have a house, specifically even if the house maybe hasn't passed down through generations, that your family bought for maybe a couple of
Now you may be living in the house, but you don't own it until you've paid off the mortgage.
Well, this
the bank
is
owns most of it most
and,
of the time.
And on paper, you are seen to be incredibly wealthy and even a millionaire. But you know, you didn't pay. You or your parents, or maybe even your grandparents, didn't pay anywhere near a million euro.
It links into the story in the front of the Sunday Times. Harris urged to cut inheritance taxes in budget. Now, it's not necessarily that the children are going to get the house without paying tax, but others might be given generous allocations, like nieces and nephews.
Yes, and we have seen the government cut inheritance tax in recent budgets, and this is particularly heralded by Fine Gael, of course, and Simon Harris, the finance minister. He will no doubt be keen to cut it. It was actually Sean Canney who raised the issue at a coalition leaders meeting on Monday night with Micheál Martin and Simon Harris. He said the family should be able to pass on a business, a farm or other assets to the next generation without being unduly penalised, according to coalition source and a Fine Gael source, saying that the Taoiseach understands that the burden that inheritance tax can place on families seeking to pass on a farm or a home to the next generation. He has consistently said there are fairness issues in the current system and that these deserve consideration. Now, cuts to inheritance tax are usually quite expensive, and the question is, who do they benefit and do those people need a tax cut? When, Pat, we're talking about very high housing costs, very high electricity costs and so on.
Having paid the million for your house and then you leave it to your kids and they have to find 300,000 to inherit it.
Yes, I mean, where is the fairness there? So that is probably a fair.
Anyway, I want to hark back to that breaking story from the UK. This is Peter Kyle, Business Secretary, being interviewed by Sky News Trevor Phillips this morning.
Do you think that he thinks it is now in the interest of the country that he should stand down?
All I know for fact is that he has been engaging in conversations with a wide range of people, including myself, and that he is, as well as working really hard over this weekend, I think he is making time to reflect on the political realities, challenges and opportunities that he finds himself in.
And what is that? An object lesson in how not to answer a question.
Well,
what do you think, Peter? Well, I'm not telling you. I'm telling you what he's thinking, but not me.
Look, I think if he's sitting back to think about his future, that's pretty clear in fairness. I mean, the issue is for political leaders. Once they say their authority is in any way in doubt or that perhaps they're not hanging on for as long as they should, they basically, that authority totally dissolves and they best make a move for it.
You haven't mentioned the Sunday World, by the way. The front page is entirely Barbie gets the boot. Sex offender Barbie Kardashian faces eviction for using council flat for prostitution. She admits to filming clients during sex work, but claims she was the perfect tenant.
Yes, and we have seen many reports about Barbie Kardashian ever since she came out of prison. And of course, you know, she's done a few media interviews and so on as well.
Gabby Gatavaskaita, thank you very much for going through the paper. Gabby is BBC's Dublin correspondent.